Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable! Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe in myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Touching gloves at the bell, Mike. Episode 19 of the Last Round Podcast. I'm Danny Z alongside Mike Shepard for 19. We're almost to 20. Almost 20 weeks of this stuff. Almost there, right?
That's it. Each week, getting better and better like a fine wine, Danny Z.
Like a fine wine. Are we talking about American wine or English wine?
We'll say English wine.
What's the difference? I don't think there's a difference.
I don't think there's much.
Yeah, I just threw it out there. I was hoping you would know a difference, but I guess not. But jumping right into it, this past Saturday, January 26th from the Toyota Center in Houston, Texas, on DAZN, the latest player in not just the boxing game, but the sports game, MMA, boxing.
Baseball soon.
Other stuff. They're adding slowly but surely. On DAZN USA, Jaime Munguia gets the unanimous decision win over Takeshi Inoue, who is the Monster's cousin?
Cousin, I believe, something like that.
Something like that. Munguia retains his WBO super welterweight title by scores of 120-108 twice and 119-109. Inoue actually gave him some problems. Like, you know, I mean, for a young fighter, you know, Munguia is still learning. You know, he's got a lot of potential, but I was pleasantly surprised on the fight. There were some pretty good moments. I mean, what do you think?
I think it was a harder fight than many people were expecting. I think, you know, Munguia had kind of picked him to look good, to carry on, you know, like his KO streak. Somebody that they could kind of put in the ring and, you know, keep that image that he has at the minute of being like a wrecking machine. So I think it was kind of a surprise for most people who watched it to see it being an entertaining 12 rounds. I thought Munguia, you know, his body work was good. He had some good left hooks to the body, some good left hooks to the head. But for me, I think if he steps up in class, he takes too many punches.
Yeah.
With a handpicked opponent like Takeshi, you know, he can get away with that. But down the line, when he's facing some people with, you know, more experience, a lot more power, you know, like the Herds or the Charlos, which obviously people are throwing those names into the mix. He definitely couldn't stand there and just take the punches that he did on the weekend.
I liked it.
It was definitely a fan-friendly fight. I think we all thought that Munguia was just going to go in there and blow him out. So it was very back and forth, you know. They both took some good shots. Takeshi, definitely, somebody I would like to see again on these shores. I think he's a good opponent for a good fight. So
I think he earned himself another fight over here in the States.
Yeah, you know, because obviously, you know, like Showtime, HBO, and DAZN, I imagine, you know, when somebody has a good fight, they'll pick them and they'll bring them over again. So it was somebody that I would definitely like to see again.
Right. No, absolutely, absolutely. But like you said, like we talked about, you know, we thought, you know, Munguia was going to take him out and stuff like that. I mean, we didn't know too much about Inoue coming over here. But, you know, when they get fighters like that coming over here, who not a lot of people know about. It's just more like, oh, okay, well, the record's pretty solid, so hopefully it becomes a good fight. People's expectations are kind of low, so it's easier to surpass. So, but I liked it, though, man. Like, you know, these Asian fighters putting in work. You know, you got the Monster in New Way. You got his family member. I don't think it's brother. Cousin, right? Maybe.
I think it's his cousin. I think people were trying to find out. I think there's so many Inoues that they were reading about. They're unsure whether it's, I don't think it's a brother, maybe a cousin, maybe not even related down the line.
They're probably not even related. That's why I was like, are they related? They might be, but I don't know. It feels like they should be.
What do you see next for Munguia? I think
they talked about what? They talked about him.
Andrade.
Obviously, DAZN wants him to move up to 160, which I think is the wrong move.
Because they were asking him that in the ring straight after the fight.
They asked him to move up to 160 to fight Andrade. To talk about a clash with Canelo. And I get it, you know, the money, and Munguia's a young cat, you know, moving up, and he's got a world title now and stuff like that. And, you know, it gives him at 160 right now for DAZN is their cream of the crop.
Mm-hmm.
So like, okay, well, if we can move Munguia up, that gives us some more pieces to play with. You know, Canelo, Andrade, technically Lemieux, they have a, well, I don't think he's going to be at 160 anymore. But,
no, I don't think so.
But maybe, you know, Triple G, possibly. So, you know, Billy Joe Saunders, maybe. You know, there's ways in there. So obviously they want him to move up, but I still think he's not nearly ready for any of those guys at, and not even Andrade. I think Andrade would, oh, well, obviously he, I don't want to say obviously because I feel like a dick now, but he would have an easier time in terms of a fight with Andrade than he would with like Canelo and some of the other guys. Triple G, obviously.
The Triple G fight would be more his style. I think, you know, the way that he is, and we kind of both admit, I think we've both said that, you know, Munguia is still kind of flat-footed.
Yeah.
So facing somebody like Andrade, Billy Joe Saunders, I think we would see kind of like a Lemieux, Billy Joe Saunders type of fight again where, you know, Munguia's not going to get his shots off because he's not going to get a chance to plant his feet before the opponent's, you know, in and out.
Right.
He's going to be in and out of range the whole time, just kind of keep Munguia looking very, very one-dimensional, I would assume. But, you know, he's still not really fought many people of note in that division he's already in. You know, we're all looking for those Jarrett Hurd, Lara, you know, even someone like a Kell Brook.
Well, didn't they mention Kell Brook?
Yes, they mentioned Kell Brook afterwards because obviously he's still looking for a fight after Amir Khan's, you know,
dropped him again. I wouldn't be surprised if Munguia and Kell Brook go at it in, you know, sometime in the next couple months. I put him on the undercard of Jacobs Canelo.
If Eddie Hearn does that, I'm going to have to start thinking that Eddie Hearn doesn't like him. He's probably. Put him in there with, what was it, Triple G who broke his eye? Put him with Charlo who broke his
eye. I mean, maybe, but like, you know, Kell Brook, like, he would get a world title. He would get a world title shot to try to get 154. I mean, this could be the last time he could get a world title shot. I mean, you know, Kell Brook is still a name, you know. I could see that happening. I mean, do you realistically see Munguia fighting Charlo, Hurd, Lara?
I think Charlo's going to be tied up, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's going to be tied up fighting the rematch with Tony Harrison.
Sure going to be tied up there. I think that's why they were pushing the narrative so hard for Munguia. Like, oh yeah, what about 160 at Canelo and stuff like that? Like, you know, I understand. Like, you know, he's about the same age of, you know, Canelo was at that point 6, 7 years ago, 8 years ago. At that point, he was, you know, being pushed up like that. You know, he fought Mosley at like 19 or 20 years old, and then fights Mayweather at like 21, 22 years old, and Munguia is like 21 right now. So I get it. You know, he's got a world title. So, you know, I understand the marketing behind it. But, you know, in no way is he ready to move up to 160. No way. Like, it's kind of even difficult to pinpoint, like, him fighting somebody like a Hurd or like a Lara at 154. Because even then, like, skill-wise, like, I don't know. I like Munguia, and I think he can put up a fight. Obviously, he relies on his power and it, because he's a big kid and it works for him. But, you know, his next fight is going to have to be against somebody. Like, I would like a Kell Brook.
I'm starting to wonder if he punches as hard as we kind of all think. You know, he had trouble taking out Liam Smith. You know, and Liam Smith took him a lot more rounds than we thought. He hit Takashi Inoue with some lovely left hooks to the body.
Yeah,
some of those I was watching and I was like, dude, that guy can take a good shot. So I'm wondering whether he looks like he punches hard, but you know, he struggled with the last two guys to take them out. You know, they obviously went rounds and rounds with him. So,
you know, I mean, we'll see. There's definitely options for him, which is great. I mean, you know, for some fighters, there's no options. Like, oh yeah, I'm not going up. Like, he's obviously young. He could go to 160 if he wants, obviously, because he's a big kid. But then he has a world title 154 and he can still make 154. Remember, I think we talked about it like in one of the past episodes where I said, well, look, like as long as he can make 154, they're going to keep him there because he has a world title now. If they move him up to 160, the competition becomes a lot more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's guys like Jacobs, Canelo, you know, Triple G and stuff like that. So, you know, the spotlight on him at 154 is a little bit bigger than it would be at 160, if that makes sense.
I'm hoping later down the line when they do move him up, they do Golden Boy v. Golden Boy, keep it in-house, and he fights Lemieux. If Lemieux can still make that.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I don't think Lemieux... I'd be surprised if Lemieux goes to 160 again. Like, I feel like his next fight would be, like, some type of catchweight like 165 or something against somebody. So, or it could be 168 just to kind of get his confidence back up against somebody, you know.
I think he's burnt his bridges, hasn't he, with Golden Boy? The amount of times he's failed to make weight.
Maybe. I mean, that's tough, though. Yeah. Like, that's tough. Because I like Lemieux. I've always been a fan. Like, you know, he's an exciting fighter. Like, you know, he knocks people out. And, you know, yeah, he lost to, like, you know, Billy Joe Saunders, Triple G. But, you know, hopefully he can bounce back. But, yeah, Munguia, I mean, I don't know who else you can put him up against except Kell Brook in terms of any type of competition step up. Unless they do a rematch with... No, they won't do a rematch with... In a way, but
I think we'll see him back out again soon. I mean, you know, after last year, you know, he had what, 6 or 7 fights last year.
I know, it's insane.
I think he'll be back out again soon because I think with the new coach, I think, you know, they'll try to put some of the stuff they've taught him into practice. He'll probably come back out and fight. You know,
Robert Alcazar is his trainer, who was Oscar De La Hoya's trainer.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a good coach. I'm hoping that we can see something more footwork wise. Work on his defense a little bit more, trying to get in and out of the pocket, because the minute he seems to be standing there too long, and like I touched on before, you know, when he steps up, he's some of those punches that he can take at the minute from the bigger guys, I don't see him being able to take, you know.
Yeah, me neither. But, you know, I'm excited, though. He's young, got a world title. Hopefully he fights somebody prominent. Like you said, Charlo's tied up with Harrison. I mean, Lara's there. But are they going to make it because it's PBC? Probably not. So they're going to have to find somebody. That's why I said Kell Brook's name makes sense. It makes sense.
They're both with DAZN, Eddie Hearn and Golden Boy. So
it makes sense. So who knows? Who knows? I mean, I think Kell Brook would take it. He's going to try to show up Amir Khan. He's like, well, I'm going to fight this kid then for a world title if you're going to fight Crawford.
I could see it happening. I think, I mean, Kell Brook, it looks like he's trying to cash out.
So yeah,
I'd imagine it would just depend on the money.
I mean, and if Kell Brook wins, he gets a world title. He's like, okay, well, he's got a world title now.
Yeah.
So he gets to have a couple more fights where he gets some bigger paydays. So who knows? But we'll see. And then moving on to the upset of the night and probably my favorite moment in terms of the post-fight interview, Can Zhu. That's right. Can Zhu. C-A-N. And his last name is X-U. Gets the unanimous decision win over Jesus Rojas for the WBA super featherweight title by scores of 117-111, 116-112, and 118-110. Did you see that post-fight?
I saw the post-fight, yeah.
Man, you could see it, like how great. I'm surprised his English was that
good?
It was really good.
Yeah, he said I think it was only the second time he'd ever been over to the US for a fight.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's marketable because obviously at the minute, you know, his English was a better than we expected.
Oh, yeah.
So it was a good victory. You could see how happy he was.
Yeah, man. I think he was even surprised. He's like, holy crap, I did it.
Yeah.
I did it. And he was so grateful. And then he shouts out Oscar De La Hoya, like, you know, thank you for giving me the chance to fight. And then you could hear somebody on his team like, yeah, Golden Boy. I was dying when that happened. And then you can see right at the end of the shot, De La Hoya comes in and like kind of grabs him by the shoulder and stuff. I think in De La Hoya's eyes, he's like, all right, I can make some money with this kid. So, yeah. I mean, if he doesn't get, if Golden Boy doesn't sign him to at least like a 2-fight deal or something just to kind of put him, I'm going to be pissed. I'm going to be pissed because after that, he deserves to be signed.
Straight after, they were already talking about him being in line to face Leo Santa Cruz.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they did mention
later
that.
Later this year.
But like, so. I you know what? I respect DAZN for when they do their interviews following like their fights and stuff like that. They'll tell their fighters, like, oh, okay, who do you want to fight? Like, you know, and they'll mention names from other networks.
Yeah, which is good. Obviously, you know, back in the day, they would try to keep it.
Yeah.
Golden Boy, just Golden Boy. They wouldn't name, like, obviously Top Rank. Or,
yeah, yeah. And yeah. But I respect that, though. I mean, that just shows that, like, look, like, yeah, at the end of the day, there still has to be negotiation in between the networks and purses and all that stuff. But at least DAZN is putting it out there. Like, look, like we're willing to do this. We're calling you out on TV. You know, like, you know, we're throwing the name in there. Who cares if you fight for Fox, ESPN, you know? The public pressure's building up. So, because, yeah. I mean, DAZN, obviously, they mentioned, like, they want to be, like, an ESPN type. So, they want to be, like, Sports Central and, you know. But at the moment, they're looked at as, like, obviously competition in terms of against Showtime, you know, PBC, Fox, and stuff like that. But I like it. And I'm a fan. Can Zhu got a new fan in me.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he was good. I mean, Leo Santa Cruz would be an interesting fight later down the line. I'm not too sure, though. I thought Leo would be looking for more bigger names.
You really think that, you really think that fight's going to happen though?
No, I mean, I think
it's not. It's not. I mean,
there's nothing in it for Leo.
There's not.
It's all.
If he beats him, it's just like, okay, yeah, like it'd probably be a fun fight. But if you know, I mean, he's got a world title now,
mm-hmm.
so there is that. That could entice, because Leo has the WBC.
Well,
or does he have the super?
He had both, because he has WBC and then he fought Abner Meares for the WBA.
Super or regular?
Probably super.
Oh, God. I hate going in. I don't even know anymore.
Because that was a WBA regular featherweight title. So he has the.
I guess. You're a regular champion.
The super duper?
I'm the super champion. I think that's a bargaining chip for Kanzu, that he obviously has a world title. So, I mean, it could happen. I mean, there's fights that are made, but like, hey, you know, it's a unification fight of some sort. So, it could happen. But you're right, though. I mean, I don't think Leo would, you know, I don't think PBC would put him against.
Nothing in it for him. I mean, I was speaking to Leo in camp for the Abner Meares fight. He was saying that he was looking for those, you know, career-defining fights, big paydays later down the line. Obviously, Cal Frampton was one of them before he lost to Josh Warrington. Gary Russell is obviously another one that I think the WBC, didn't they mandate that, actually? So that's
did
one
they?
That, I think so, Christmas time. So I think that's one that's supposed to be in the works.
Gary Russell once every 2 years.
And yeah, like, and then, you know, even someone like Oscar Valdez, you know, would be an interesting fight.
Man, they should throw, you know, throw Joseph Diaz in there. Throw Joseph Diaz against Kanzu, you know? Like,
yeah, well, he's just moved up, I think, to the...
To 130?
Yeah, and obviously he fights in 2 weeks' time, so... That would be a good fight.
I know, but like, well, I think he mentioned that he can't make 126 anymore, or he just doesn't work for his body.
Or he missed weight, didn't he? A couple of
So I think, you know, 126 is out of the question. That's why he moved up, but so that's probably out of the picture at the moment. But I was gonna say, well, Golden Boy could work. Who knows? But I'm a fan, Kanzu. You know, he got a fan in me, and I'm sure he got a lot of other fans, especially with that post fight interview. And I was like, man, his English is actually really freaking good.
Yeah, it was.
Really good. I was impressed. So upset of the night. And then in terms of, you know, overall moment of the night, I probably picked that too, because that was unexpected. I was like, dang, where'd that come from? So congratulations to Kanzu. It's probably my new favorite name in the boxing world, Kanzu. So whenever somebody says, like, who's your favorite boxer right now? Kanzu. So shout out to Kanzu and his team. Golden Boy, they better sign him. At least to like a 2-fight deal or something.
I would imagine.
I don't know if he's. I mean, he might be promoted by like some other promoter, and they made a deal with. I don't know. You know, they sometimes promoter.
Do that too. They might have an option.
Like Zanfer promotions. Like that's what they do with a lot of their fighters. Like that's what they can fight in like multiple networks. Like, yeah, you know, we promote them, but we'll strike a deal with PBC or Top Rank because you guys have the television network. So, I mean, could be something like that. I don't know. So if he has a promoter, I apologize, but. Moving on, Virgil Ortiz Jr. improved to 12-0 with 12 KOs with the technical decision, right?
Yeah, retired after the fifth round.
Right.
Against the doctor.
Jesus Valdez.
Doctor spoke to them in the corner, and the doctor decided to wave it off. One of my prospects of the year, I mean, highly regarded really in the junior welterweight, Virgil Ortiz, obviously 12-0, 12 KOs. That was actually the first time he'd ever been past round three.
That's insane.
This is quite crazy, isn't it, really? Because he's not really been overly protected, I'd have said. You know,
he hasn't really.
Well, he came in fighting Valdez, who was 23-5-1. So, you know, he's had nearly 30 fights, nearly three times as many as Ortiz. Ortiz actually said afterwards he actually wasn't overly impressed with his own performance, which kind of shows that, you know, that how highly he kind of regards himself at that time.
Right.
Obviously, he ended up having... back-to-back training camps because he was supposed to be on the New York card where they called it off the day before the fight because he had that LASIK surgery.
Yeah, that whole eye thing.
Yeah, so he ended up having, you know, back-to-back camps, so he could have, you know, been a little bit burnt out. I thought he performed really well. I love the way he mixes it up, you know, goes to the body, goes to the head. Definitely had some great shots in there, you know, where he was kind of coming in close, throwing like a hook and then stepping back out of range straight away. Definitely one to watch for the year. And at the end of the fight, they asked him about what he wants next, and he called out the WBO champ, Maurice Hooker. They said that would be a good fight to have, you know, in Dallas, because he's from Dallas.
That would be.
So it'd be a good, great step up for him, you know, whether they could both get that. Maurice Hooker is signed to some kind of deal with Matchroom, I believe.
Oh, that's right. So it could work.
Yeah, and obviously he's Golden Boy, both with DAZN. So it just depends. I think Virgil Ortiz is actually rated in the top 15 in the WBO before that fight.
So now he should be.
So he should be even higher.
Yeah.
So, you know, that should be something that hopefully we could see in, you know, 2019.
I like it. You know, I think he mentioned in his post-fight interview, Ortiz did, that he feels like he's ready for a world title shot or something, or he's close to it. And, you know, a fight with Hooker, especially both being from Texas,
it
makes sense.
Fight. Yeah,
it makes
fight.
Sense. So I think Ortiz comes back. You think he comes back before or on the Canelo Jacobs card? I think he's going to be on that card, but do you think he fights before then?
What are we in? February, nearly? May? I could see him back out. You know, he back-to-back training camps, maybe have a little rest, and then, you know, fight on the undercard, and then obviously maybe headline or co-headline an event of his own in Texas later in the year. You know, if he gets the Maurice Hooker fight, then I imagine obviously you would probably headline that card.
Right.
But to me, he's definitely one I think to watch this year. Like I picked Teofimo Lopez at Christmas when we were talking about it, and he was obviously my second place.
Second place.
Golden Boy should push him more. I think he's a better prospect than Ryan Garcia. We kind of touched on this at Christmas. But obviously, Garcia already has that kind of fan base built up due to social media.
That's where it's at, man. I'm telling you. But
hands down, Virgil Ortiz will wipe the floor with him by the time they both retire.
Yeah.
Virgil Ortiz's career is going to be levels and levels above what Ryan Garcia manages to achieve.
I hope we can come back to that statement in like years. Be like, remember when you said that?
Unless Ryan Garcia gets a hand picked, like Adrian Broner, like vacant
you never
belts
know.
In four different weight divisions.
You never know.
You know,
you never know. I mean, if Broner can do it, I mean, I don't know. Hopefully, I have, you know, a lot of people talk crap on these young fighters, especially guys like Ryan Garcia and stuff like that. But like, he's young enough and he's got, you know, one of the, you know, best trainers in boxing right now with Eddie Reynoso and the Reynosos. And I hope he finds it, man. I hope he finds it, because like when boxers become like, they transcend like just boxing and they actually become, you know, type of celebrities.
Like it's only Joshua Canelo style.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, even Floyd and stuff like that. Like, you know, it helps the sport. You know, we can't really complain about that, because then it puts eyeballs on our sport. So I like it, you know. And then as a side note, Ryan Garcia just did like a TMZ interviewed him recently and they asked him about Selena Gomez or something, the singer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he said like, oh, he pretty much asked her out or something. And the last time I checked it was, they had quite a few views, like in the hundreds of thousands. And I think it was still going up. So, hey, that I'm sure Golden Boy was like, hell yeah. Hell yeah. So
if those two got together, yeah, should that be good for the spot? So,
man. So whatever. But I hope Ortiz, Hooker, I hope that happens, especially both being on DAZN. I could see it happening maybe by the end of the year. Maybe.
I hope so.
So we'll see. And then moving on, he's back. One time in the last 2 years, he's back. Keith Thurman gets a hard-fought majority decision win over locally Riverside, California's Josecito Lopez for the WBA Super World Welterweight title. I didn't really expect Thurman to come back. I mean, hopefully, like a lot of people, logically, didn't come back to like be at top form after 2 years. And he even said, like, you know, I'm not going to be in my top form, but I'm still going to go in there and do my thing. But you know, it wasn't necessarily a close fight in a sense, but there was just so many dramatic moments in terms of Josecito landing some shots. What round was it where he had Thurman, like, you know, he had him rocked. He had him rocked, and there was still like a minute and like 20 seconds left. And I was watching it and I was like, holy crap. I was like, I didn't think he's going to stop him, but I was like, he's going to go down. There's like a minute and a half still.
It was the seventh.
It was the seventh. Yeah, I was going to say the seventh, but I wasn't sure. I like the fight. I like the fight, you know, like, and then people say, oh, that just shows you that Thurman's not like, you know, he's not the same anymore and stuff like that. And even Danny Garcia, who was on the broadcast, was kind of talking crap. And then he tweeted out rematch, like, you know, like, oh, yeah. And then some interviews out there that I've seen, like, oh, yeah, you know, maybe he doesn't have it anymore. Like, I mean, come on. Like, yeah, it sucks that he hasn't been in the ring in 2 years, but he hasn't been in the ring in 2 years. He had like surgeries and whatever. Like, you got to give the guy credit. Like, he took some shots. He took some shots and he stayed in there and he fought back and
The three judges actually gave the seventh, even though he didn't go down, they gave it 10-8.
Yeah, what the hell?
Which you don't
That's
see.
Crazy.
You don't often see that.
You never see that. But I was impressed by that. Appreciated that. I was like, wow, I can't believe they gave it 10-8. I was really impressed by that because technically he was out on his feet for a little bit.
Yeah, you know, he got rocked and obviously tried to stay on the outside. And
he did that Deontay Wilder with Luis Ortiz. It was just like, how the hell did you stand? Did you stay standing?
Yeah, it was a good fight. I thought it was close. I was surprised that Jose Cito just came in, and I think he probably thought to himself, you know, 22 months off, I'm just going to go in there. I'm just going to put it on him. I'm just going to be the pressure fighter and just try and walk him down. You know, Thurman pretty much was on his bike for quite a lot of the remaining rounds,
right,
from the seventh onwards, just trying to back him up and just try and keep him off with his jab. Yeah, he definitely did look a little bit rusty. You can see why he decided this year was going to be a get-back year, is the phrase he liked to use.
Mm-hmm.
Jose Cito Lopez, I thought, looked good. I thought a few of the scorecards were a little bit wide. Did you not think?
Yeah, a little bit. But, I mean, I still think that Thurman...
One of them was a draw, which, you know, I kind of thought that's...
113, right?
Yeah, it was a little bit generous.
That was generous, yeah.
And then one of them was 117, 109. I thought the 115, 111, you know, was close enough. Obviously, he rocked him. He got that 10-8 round. Thurman, I thought, started well, kind of faded at the end, you know, the 22 months off. You could see that, obviously.
And Lopez went down in round two.
Yeah, exactly.
So I thought, probably just like you, like, oh, okay, he's
done.
And it was kind of like a flash knockdown, though.
Yeah, it seemed like it.
Wasn't one of those, like, you know, straight, like, very dramatic knockdowns. It was more of like a flash. They were trading and he fell and, you know, he got back up. But at first I was like, okay, I think, because Thurman was trying to finish him off a little bit after, but then he kind of hit the brakes. And I thought, oh, okay, you know, this might end early. You know, maybe that one time moniker is actually going to come back this time. And I think that was the first time that Thurman had any type of knockdown in like years, like multiple fights. I think the last time he had it was 20.
When he was at 140, I believe.
Was it?
I think it was before he moved up to 147.
That's insane.
So, the power didn't seem to move with him at 140. He was kind of
He was one time at 140, but at 147, he's 10 times.
So. Exactly, yeah. Well, not 10 times a year. Definitely not 10 fights a year. But anyway, after that, he kind of obviously called out Manny Pacquiao.
Yeah, I could see it. But, like, you're calling out Manny Pacquiao because why? Like, I thought this was a get-back year. I don't really see Pacquiao as a get-back fight in your get-back year. Like, you know, does that mean you want to fight him? Like, you know, I don't know. Maybe he just threw it out there just so they can build it. You know, makes sense.
Name recognition, you think?
I mean, honestly, I would, you know, they talk about the Floyd fight, Pacquiao fight rematch, but I wouldn't mind seeing Pacquiao Thurman.
I
would appreciate that fight.
If the Floyd fight, obviously, you know, Floyd's going to get first refusal, obviously, of Pacquiao.
Oh, yeah.
Just for the name, the name and obviously the cash. No, the payday is going to be bigger if he fights Floyd. So obviously, you know, Floyd will get to say yes or no. And then obviously after that, I think Thurman would be an interesting fight. It'd definitely be the biggest name I think he's fought.
I wouldn't even be surprised if they put Thurman and Broner together. They give Thurman one more a comeback fight, mm-hmm, to get his confidence up. Put him against Granados again or something, even though that was a kind of a tough fight. Just so he can be like, oh, I'm back, baby. You know what he does. Like yesterday, people can think like, oh, yeah, maybe he still got it, which he won't. But and then they put Thurman against Broner. I wouldn't be surprised.
I could see that. You know, Al Haymon seems to like Broner
because he moves the needle, man.
That's it. You know, he puts bums on seats. People want to see him.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like Floyd, want to see him either get knocked out because of his mouth, or, you know, people enjoy the persona that he puts on.
Yeah.
You know, when the cameras are turned on. So, you know, I would watch it. I'm not gonna lie to you. You know, Broner.
Oh, yeah.
I would watch just to see how he does. But I think now we've all kind of learned not to expect big things of him because again and again and again.
The problem, Broner.
You know, we get drawn into the Showtime where we think to yourself, you know what? I think he has learned his lesson. I think he is going to let his hands go.
Nope. I told you that's why they'll give me a button.
I got drawn in.
You got drawn in.
But
I hope you learn your mistake so the next time you don't give the same opinion or similar opinion. But, you know. Yeah, Thurman gets the majority decision win, retains his WBA Super World Welterweight title. You know, give credit to Jose Cito Lopez. Like, you know, he he was swinging wide haymaker shots at times, like just swinging his arms, trying to catch him. And I thought, I was like, man, like, he's going to catch you. He's going to catch you, like, with those swinging shots. And, yeah, he got Thurman did catch him a couple times with some decent shots. But the whole time I was like, especially when he had him hurt in the seventh, and he, you know, after that round, he had some, you know, some pretty big moments against Thurman where he got him with, like, that straight left and everything where he kind of rocked his head back. The whole time I was like, man, if he was, like, a lot more compact instead of trying to swing wildly and stuff like that, I feel like he probably would have at least got a knockdown or something, because like he was swinging for the fences at times.
For somebody that should be the WBC and WBA champion, obviously he had to give up the WBC because of the injuries, being off for 22 months.
I wonder how they decided to give up the WBC and not the WBA. I wonder how they made that decision.
I imagine the WBC kind of told him, like, hey, you voluntarily giving it up. Once you come back, we'll give you a, you know, like champion in recess kind of fight.
Maybe they were the first ones to offer it, and they're like, oh, he's like, oh, okay.
But he was definitely getting caught with some shots. Imagine that he shouldn't have done.
Imagine if they announced him like that. The champion in recess, Keith, one time. That would have been funny. I'm telling you, I'm gonna get that going. Champion in recess, to our listeners, social media, everybody. That's a term that's been coined by WBC, right?
Yeah, because they did it to Benavidez as well.
Benavidez as well. So the champion in recess, so...
I'm sure, you got me thinking, did they announce Tyson Fury as the lineal champion when he comes out?
Yeah.
They did?
I think so. I think they say the lineal.
I've never heard that spoke about so much until Tyson Fury came back and started bringing it up.
He's made it relevant. Yeah. It is what it is. Like, and people, and then that's another topic for another show, but the lineal champion, like, didn't Lennox Lewis retire with the lineal championship technically? So like, because the lineal...
Man who beat the man.
The man who beat the man who beat the man who beat the man. And it goes back to like the 1920s or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was Lennox Lewis. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. It was somebody though, mid-2000s, I think. Or whoever had it at that time, the heavyweight, they retired technically with it. So nobody really beat the man. It was just kind of, you know what I mean?
No one ever beat Rocky Marciano.
That's true.
So he would have.
That's like, yeah, that's true. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, did you really beat the man? Or is it kind of like, well... We can't beat them because they stopped. So
next one gets it.
The next one gets it. So I guess it makes sense. Moving on to the co-feature, actually, of that card. Another heavyweight bout. Local LA guy from actually USC, Gerald Washington, gets stopped inside two rounds against Adam Kalnacki, right?
Yeah, Kalnacki.
Honestly, I picked Washington in this. I picked Washington. And I'm surprised he got taken down in two rounds. Kalnacki, like, what the hell?
Kalnacki just teed off on him.
Yeah. He didn't waste any time.
You could see that Washington was obviously, you know, he didn't take up boxing until later on in his life. He obviously was a football player to begin with and then moved, I think, to boxing when he was like 22 years old, I believe, something like that. He just doesn't like to get punched. And unfortunately, as a boxer, you need to get punched in the face, and he doesn't seem to like it. No, as soon as Kalnacki kind of caught him a few times, he kind of, you know, stayed away, ended up going onto the ropes and trying to use the ropes kind of like his leverage just to try and, you know, rock him, sock him type of thing. And Kalnacki just teed off on him. And it was, you could see early on that it was going to be a short night. Kalnacki did actually better than Deontay Wilder, I think, took five rounds to get Washington out of there.
Yeah.
And I think Gerald Miller actually took longer than Kalnacki did. So, you know, putting that into perspective... You know, is Kalnacki going to be up there? Is kind of like a challenger?
Maybe. I mean, the best thing for him right now is that his name got at least entered into the semi-conversation.
Yeah. He's one of those heavyweights that doesn't waste many punches.
Right.
I think it was 106 shots thrown, 49 connected. So he ended up with a 46% power.
Put him against Luis Ortiz.
Well, that'd be a good fight.
And you never know, man. I mean, do it. You know, Ortiz doesn't... Is Ortiz signed with PBC? Or is he just kind of there?
He was signed by PBC. I don't know whether he still is. Obviously, he's kind of working his way back up into...
Throw them together,
into
man.
...into relevance at the minute, so...
Throw them together. I mean, whatever. But, you know, yeah, he improves to 19-0 with 15 KOs. Poor Gerald Washington, man. I like the guy, too, but it's not working for him right now.
I think he's... If he wants to still keep fighting and... gatekeeper status, he still has kind of a name
Yeah.
But he's outside that kind of top 15 of relevance to do with the title shots.
Yeah, I think he knows it.
And like I kind of touched on, you can see just watching, he doesn't like to get punched.
Right.
So, you know, maybe he's made enough money that he can go do something else now.
Yeah, I'm sure he's done okay. Fighting for Al Haymon, PBC, he's done pretty decent. So
fighting Wilder, I'm sure, was a decent
payday. Yeah, I'm sure he got pretty decent money for that. So, you know, I wouldn't complain too much. And then moving on, fight previews this Saturday, February 2nd from the Ford Center at the Star in Frisco, Texas on ESPN Plus, which is, the Star is actually the Cowboys training facility, the Dallas Cowboys training facility.
Oh, really?
Right? I think so. The rematch. Alvarez, Kovalev. Alvarez is obviously the WBO light heavyweight champion at the moment, who got that upset last year against Kovalev, which was a surprise to a lot of people. Maybe not a lot of people, because a lot of people said after the Andre Ward's fight that Kovalev wasn't the same fighter. So, it's going to be a rematch. Are you picking Alvarez? Are you picking Kovalev? I think the thing with Kovalev, and him being with main events, you know, promotions, like, obviously he's the biggest star the main events had. So that's why, like, hey, we're going to make this rematch. Like, that's because it's the same thing with Andre Ward. With Andre Ward, when Andre Ward being the first time, even though it was kind of, like, controversial, they made it right away again. And now with this one, you know, they give Kovalev, like, a comeback. Didn't he have, like, a fight before this?
Kovalev?
Yeah. Or what, did he jump right into it?
This jump, but straight back in.
He is, right? So it kind of tells you, like, yeah, they need him to have, like, a world title to at least kind of bring some income in. You know what I mean? So I think he's done, man. I mean, I think this is the last shot.
He also has that. He hasn't got arrested last year before the first fight for punching a female up in Big Bear.
Oh, yeah. What the hell was that?
He has that court case hanging over his head. So,
oh, my gosh.
Is that going to be a distraction? But yeah, I agree with you, Danny Z. I totally think that. I think Kovalev is actually past it. I thought in the second Andre Ward fight and also this first fight that when it starts to get a little bit sticky for Kovalev, he kind of gives in and looks like he just kind of fades away.
Yeah.
You know, he was kind of winning. He was winning on the scorecards in the first Alvarez fight.
Right.
Then he got caught. And then, instead of using his experience, you know, trying to clear his head, he just came out and, you know, tried to wildly swing. I think it's going to be the same type of thing in this second fight in the rematch. I think that, you know, maybe it's just the last payday for Kovalev for, you know, kind of being the main person for main events over these last few years. Is having a court case going to be a distraction for him? I'm pretty sure it will be. You know, obviously, I'm sure his home life's not going too
well. Yeah, the fact that sucks.
How it kind of happened. So, yeah, I think out of the Crusher, I think he's done. I think this will be the last time we'll maybe have seen him. You know, he was probably the most feared man in the light heavyweight division from 2009 onwards.
Yeah.
Until he faced Andre Ward.
I think, I don't even think, like, I think it was just Andre Ward, like, broke him down mentally.
Definitely, yeah.
I think that was mostly it. I don't think it was, like, necessarily, like, a physical thing. I think it was just more, like, it was a mental thing.
And I think the first fight ending kind of controversially with the low blows.
Oh, yeah.
I think he could use that in his head mentally to go, you know what, I didn't lose this fight.
That was the second fight, wasn't it? The low blows?
Oh, was it the second fight?
Yeah.
He could use that mentally to sort of say, look, you know what, I didn't lose this fight. That was their fault, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't lose. But, so, you know, Alvarez, I think that was a bad knockout for him.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
I did wonder whether he was going to be done on that fight. That was going to be his last fight. I'm kind of surprised that they actually decided to take the rematch because most people were kind of saying that Crusher should stay away.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they paid Adonis Stevenson two or three times. Paid Alvarez two or three times to step down as mandatory so he could fight an easier fight.
Step aside.
Fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I mean, Jay, that's, you know, that's
that says something.
That says something.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's big. So in that regard, give credit to Kovalev because he's like, oh, well, I'll fight this guy. You know, I mean, it didn't work out for him, but we'll see. Like, hopefully it's exciting. Hopefully Kovalev is coming into, like, you know what, I'm gonna do it again. And I don't know. We'll see.
He's with his new trainer as well, Buddy McGirt.
Yeah.
So can he breathe new life into Kovalev and, you know, bring back the fight that we used to see many years ago? You know, I think one of the problems he's had is obviously he's admitted he's used to drink heavily.
Yeah, he's a big drinker. Those Russians, man, I'm telling you.
That's a lot of vodka.
But I mean, honestly, like whoever wins up, I mean, this fight's going to be on ESPN, right? Mm-hmm. ESPN Plus. I mean, you know, yep. It's still ESPN, so it's a big platform. You know, it could work, but, you know, we'll see. And then moving on, Richard Comey, 27-2 versus Issa Chaniev for the vacant IBF World Lightweight title, which is the title that Mikey had mm-hmm. at 140 that he vacated, that he won from Lipnitz, Sergey Lipnitz, right? Mm-hmm. And then he vacated it. So this is for that, Mikey's old title that he vacated. And Richard Comey was actually a potential opponent before Mikey decided on Spence.
Yeah, that's right. He was the mandatory.
Right, he was the mandatory.
And then Mikey, you know, went to Perth Bids, I believe, and then Mikey decided to drop it.
Yeah.
For him. No, chasing obviously a bigger fight.
Yeah. You know, I mean, he's already admitted that, saying, like, look, man, I want the names. Like, you know, he's like, that's just where I'm at now. So, and I get it. You know, he's like, well, you know, I'll just let it go. You know, he could still fight for it later on. So, hey, this is a big opportunity for either fighter, for Comey or Chaniev, because whoever wins is going to have a world title at that weight class. So, hey.
Comey's come close twice. He fought closed matches with Robert Easter Jr.
That's true.
And Denis, is it Shavakov? Is that how you pronounce it?
I think so, yeah.
So, you know, obviously, third time lucky for Comey. He's Andre Rozier fighter.
Right.
Obviously, you know, they seem to have a good, strong camp at the minute. I think Comey comes out the winner on the night.
Right.
You know, 27-2 with 24 knockouts. I think Comey will take it. I think with KO within the distance, I think round 7, round 8. Chaniev, I don't know too much about him, to be honest.
Me neither.
13-1 with only 6 KOs. It doesn't look like he has too much power. So.
But we'll see. So, you know, regardless, that's a world title fight. So they both have a lot to gain in this fight. And then moving on. Coming back from a broken jaw, which actually happened out here in the StubHub Center in LA against Scott Quigg, Oscar Valdez, 24-0, returns to the ring against, help me pronounce, Carmine Tomasone, the Italian.
The Italian,
the one that you called.
What did I say? He was Mexican to begin with?
I think you said he was Mexican. Yeah. And you were like, oh, well, he's Italian. So you got a lot of hate mail for that. So they got him for that. The Italians got him for that. For the WBO World Featherweight title, Valdez's first fight, like I mentioned, since his broken jaw against Scott Quigg, which was an insane injury. I like watching Valdez fight, mm-hmm. Especially these fights he's been in before with Scott Quigg. And then I think before that, he was against that Filipino guy, Genesis Cervania in Arizona, where Cervania actually knocked him down. Like, Valdez is a warrior. He puts on shows. He goes in there. He leaves his heart in the ring. So
definitely fan-friendly.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it'll be interesting to see after that fight, he left Manny Robles, and there's another one that's actually signed with Eddie Reynoso. So, you know, he's in the same stable as the superstar Canelo Alvarez.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see whether, you know, Eddie Reynoso has managed to change anything. Similar to Munguia, he was another one I thought that kind of throws too much and stays in the pocket.
Right.
You know, one of the reasons why the, you know, fight with him and Scott Quigg was so entertaining was they both just stood there and traded blows.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, for...
That was a fun fight, too.
To have a long career, you know, Oscar Valdez is going to have to change his style a little bit. You know, he's kind of all action, all out wars every time he fights. You know, obviously good for us as fans, but, you know, for him to have a long, successful career, I think is something he's going to have to, you know, to learn, use his feet more, in and out the pocket, you know, trade and get away. So we'll see whether Reynoso can do that.
You think following this fight, they're going to try to make a fight with, like, another prominent fighter in that division?
Yeah, definitely. I think this is, you know, just
126 pounder.
This is a get back fight, as Keith Thurman would say.
Well, I just hope that, like, Valdez, like, doesn't say, oh, you know, yeah, this is a get back year for me. Like, you know,
yeah, get back to,
like,
years.
Oh, come on, like, get out of here with that. I mean, if anybody deserves it more than, well, I mean, Thurman did have surgery on his elbow and something else, but I don't know. In terms of injury, I feel like Valdez's jaw was a lot more crazier than...
He couldn't eat. Wasn't he just eating jelly or something
I don't know. But I don't know. I hope after this fight, if he comes out with the victory and retains his title, he gets one of the big guys. So
Josh Warrington was calling him out.
That'd be a fun fight.
That'd be an amazing
fight. That'd be fun.
That'd be definitely one. If that's done, I'd love to see that over here.
Yeah.
I'd love to attend that, because that would just be an all-out war.
Right. But moving on. The Fortnite fighter's back. Teofimo Lopez, 11-0, Goes up against Diego Magdaleno, 31-2. I don't know too much about Magdaleno.
Brother?
That is Jesse's brother, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, that's why I was like, aren't they?
You recognize the name?
I gotta stop thinking all these people are related, like freaking the Inouyes. I feel like my new favorite fighter of today, Kanzu, is gonna have a brother that's gonna pop up like in a month or so and be like, hey, you're Kanzu's brother. You're the zoo. So I don't know. Teofimo Lopez, obviously, they're promoting him a lot, you know, pushing him a lot right now, especially on social media and stuff like that. What do you think? In terms of record, Magdaleno's got a pretty solid win-loss record right there.
31-2.
That's pretty crazy.
So he's had, you know, nearly, what, three times as many fights as Teofimo?
Yeah, so.
Did you know why he's fighting a southpaw?
Why?
Because he asked He asked Top Rank to find him a southpaw so he can get ready to fight Vasyl Lomachenko.
No way.
Yep, that's the reason that they found him one. So they found him.
They're not going to put him in there with Lomachenko anytime soon.
No.
And I'm talking about years.
I agree with you, but that's what they said. Top Rank came out.
It's admirable that, like, you know, he's pushing it, the narrative, he's promoting it. Or maybe Top Rank is like, yeah, just throw it out there. You know, we're not going to make it.
They're not going to put two of their biggest stars against each other this early.
I mean, they know Lomachenko would beat him. You know, like, yeah, he's got a lot of potential. He's obviously impressing a lot, but Lomachenko's just ridiculous, like, on another level in terms of that. So, but I respect that. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up beating Magdaleno, he calls out Lomachenko after. He's like, hey, Loma, where you at? You know, let's do this. Like, hey, you might be biting off more than you could chew, but I respect it. He's putting his name out there with, at least to me, the pound, you know, pound for pound best in the world probably at the moment. So, I don't know. But I'm going Teofimo.
I'm going Teofimo.
Forget it. I'm going Magdaleno.
That would be a shock.
I'm going for the shock factor, man. I'm in the Kanzu moment right now.
I'm thinking
my boy Kanzu does it.
Teofimo.
Magdaleno can do it too. Can do it too.
I'm thinking more rounds though this time.
Yeah, I think it's going to take a lot more rounds.
I think, you know, facing the southpaw, it's going to be
Magdaleno knockout ninth round.
Ninth. I'm going to go Teofimo. I think he'll knock him out. Ooh. I think it'll go rounds, though, getting used to the southpaw style.
Yeah.
I'm going to go the same as you. I'm going to go Teofimo, knockout in the ninth.
Oh, okay.
So the opposite.
So we're going opposite. Let's see what happens. We'll talk about it next week and see what happens. News and notes. Going through these really quick. One of your countrymen, St. George Groves, retired today. Did you see the back and forth that Andre Ward and Carl Froch had in regards to that?
Yeah, I did, and then Carl Froch kind of stepped down towards the end. And for people who don't know, obviously George Groves retired today. He had two big fights with Carl Froch, and it seems like they generally didn't like each other, because even though the two fights have been and done years ago, they still go back and forth on social media. Carl Froch never really can say anything nice about him. And even today when he retired, Carl Froch said, you know, kind of put out a little statement, but it was, you know, kind of tongue-in-cheek, you know, kind of what he said. So Andre Ward ended up going back and forth with him on social media.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Carl Froch at the end eventually kind of put out more of a, you know, tasteful thing about George Groves retiring. Now, George Groves obviously was British, Commonwealth, and eventually at fourth time of asking, world champion, until obviously this year when he kind of got blown away in the World Boxing Super Series final by Callum Smith.
Yeah.
So, you know, he had a good career. He had a good amateur record, a couple of big fights with Carl Froch, and then eventually later down the line managed to get his world title. So
I think he had a great career.
He didn't really duck anybody. He fought James DeGale.
I mean, come on. Wembley against Carl Froch?
Yeah, he had
one
big fight, and then eventually kind of the start of those big Wembley fights was George Groves and Carl Froch.
Yeah.
And then obviously AJ hit the scene, and ever since then, you know, about Anthony Joshua filling Wembley. That's why for anybody who watches Carl Froch, you know, from the US, he always says you're about 80,000 fans at Wembley, because he was the first person to kind
that's
of do
his
that.
Thing right there, yeah.
So, you know, he always posts that on social media, so that's where that comes from. So,
but yeah, Andre Ward, you know, responding to like an article or something that was written saying that Froch was kind of talking smack on George Groves and stuff like that, and Andre Ward was like, come on, man, just move on. You're over 40 years old. Let it go. Like, pretty much saying, like, you know, relax or something. And then Frotch, I think, tweeted back. He was like, something like along the lines of like, oh, why did you retire again? And then people were just like, what? Like, and then somebody responded like, yeah, he retired because like he cleaned out the division. He didn't have anybody else. And then like he, Carl Froch, I think, responds by saying like, no, he just wasn't attracting TV viewers or something like that. Like, I was like, dang, he's going hard into it. And then somebody, I thought it was funny. It's fun reading these back and forths on Twitter. And then somebody said that, like, he beat you. Like, he beat you. Like, what are you on here talking smack? It sounds like you're bitter.
In the Super Six?
Yeah. And then Carl Froch comes back. He's like, he beat me 115-113. That doesn't sound like a landslide or something. It's just like, what? He still beat you. Like, I thought it was funny. So if you guys have some time, go look at that thread between Andre Ward, some fans, and Carl Froch. It's actually pretty funny. And they might still be going. I got to check it. I checked it earlier today and they were going. So who knows? And then moving on, four of the WBA top heavyweight contenders. Are they super contenders or regular contenders?
I would say loosely contenders.
Well, compete in a tournament for an eventual shot at the super champion, Anthony Joshua. I mean, I guess, you know, I don't know, whatever, you know. And then there's like, there was that news that he was probably possibly fighting Dillian White, and then I guess he's not, and then it might be Jarrell Miller in New York. I don't know. There's a bunch of stuff going on right now, but you know, we're probably going to get an announcement for Anthony Joshua soon, right? I would think, if he has a fight in April.
Yeah, I heard rumors yesterday that obviously I posted on the Twitter that he was supposed to be fighting Dillian White, and then obviously today it looks like he might not be, maybe Jarrell Miller, so... I think if the fight is going to be at Wembley, April the 13th.
I wouldn't even be surprised if it's Klitschko. They're throwing these names out there to distract people, and then boom, Klitschko.
It's looking less and less likely he's going to fight in April. It's we're nearly in February.
Yeah, that's what I said. They have to say something. That's why, I don't know.
Has he started camp behind the scenes? Nobody can obviously, at the minute, nobody knows. So,
I mean, whatever. You know, well, we'll see. But I'm betting that we'll get some news in the next week or so. Because like you said, it's in April. Like, I mean, look at it in terms of Canelo Jacobs. They already announced and their fight's a month later, essentially. Kind of, you know, in May. So who knows? But I think in the next week, we're going to hear some type of announcement. Because if we don't, I'd be surprised. Because like, okay, maybe he's not going to fight in April. If they don't announce it within the next week or so, he probably won't fight in April. So we'll see. And then moving on. My favorite and yours, Fres Oquendo's back. 45-year-old, man. Oquendo just doesn't stop. Doesn't stop, man. He's trying to be the Bernard Hopkins. Maybe he'll go until 50. Going off against Manuel Char. And Oquendo hasn't fought since losing to... Okay, I always mispronounce his name. Chagiev?
Chagiev? Russell Chagiev?
Russell Chagiev. That's what it is. I was like, what's his first name again? That was in 2014. Fres Oquendo, I remember Fres Oquendo because him and like Shannon the Cannon Briggs would always like, you know, it's like, man, like instead of Fres Oquendo, like throw Shannon the Cannon Briggs in there. At least he's entertaining. So I
mean, he's not fought for a long time.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't know. I what do you think about this fight?
That's part of the fights for the WBA.
Yeah, the tournament.
The tournament. I just don't see how they are classed as top contenders in the WBA weight division.
They just need bodies, man.
Yeah, it seems to be.
They need bodies. I mean,
Manuel Cha has tested positive recently, got banned, and then they just stopped his ban, and now he's coming back to fight Fres Oquendo, who's not fought for 5 years. It's amazing.
Oh man, we're back. The heavyweight division is back. And then the second fight that is slated to be in that tournament is between Jarrell Big Baby Miller and Trevor Bryan.
Jarrell Miller is the only real name of note in that.
Well, at the moment.
Yeah.
At the moment. You know, I mean, unless Jarrell Miller doesn't get the Joshua fight, they might pull him out of this tournament.
And yeah, like, exactly. Oh,
well, you know, he got that fight. So, I mean, who knows? Who knows? Maybe they're throwing Jarrell Miller's name in there to kind of distract from Joshua's, like, you know, news and in terms of who he's fighting in April. Who knows? Who knows? But, you know, that's, I don't know, this whole Joshua thing is just like, they have to announce something soon.
Yeah, I think people are getting annoyed now, you know. Tyson Fury came back straight away, fought.
And then I think
Deontay and Wilder. So
yeah, I think they're saying. I think I saw today that you know, Wilder and Fury are like in serious negotiations now for the rematch, and like it's getting pretty close. So
I'm hearing New York is supposed to be the favorite now.
Yeah, that's so what I read today. I wouldn't be surprised. So you know, if Fury and Wilder, they already made the fight once a couple months ago. If they make a rematch right away, man, that's showing Joshua like, hey, look, man, like we're fighting each other again.
The cutting, it seems like they can circumnavigate Joshua and actually cut him out a little bit.
Yeah, they're doing that. They're doing that. Yeah, and if they do it again, that's gonna make Joshua look stupid. Mm. They're gonna, like, look, man, like all three of us are the best, and we've fought each other twice already. Where have you been? And you're saying, oh, yeah, we don't want to negotiate. Man, we're fighting each other twice in the span of like 6 months. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. But yeah, I think Joshua's starting to become the villain, kind of. What do you think?
No, it seems that way.
They're starting to hate him like they do Eddie Hearn over there across the pond. Why do they hate Eddie Hearn over there sometimes?
I think because people kind of don't believe necessarily what he's saying.
What he says
and what happens tends to be, you know, like, somewhere in between. He's done well for the sport, though, in my opinion. You know, I've had a lot of world champions and stuff since then.
Yeah, I like him. I like Eddie Hearn. He's tall, too, and I'm tall, too. So we're both pretty tall guys, and Eddie Hearn's probably, like, what, 6'4"?
He's good at talking. He's good at promotion.
Oh, yeah, he knows the system. So, I mean, whatever. But I like this top-ranked card on ESPN Plus this weekend. I'm excited for that. Kovalev, Alvarez, Valdez on the card, Teofimo Lopez. I like that card.
Yeah, it should be.
Should be a really fun card.
Watch out for Teofimo Lopez's victory dance.
You think he'll do it again? Did they get sued last time? Like copyright?
He put something on Instagram, I believe, about, hey, watch out for my victory dance at the end. So, you know, he's got something planned as usual.
I'm gonna tweet at the Fortnite social media handle. Like, hey, don't you guys have that copyrighted? Maybe you guys should send a cease and desist letter.
You know, he always tends to take over the card when he's on it. You know, he's the takeover. Yeah, he's never obviously the main event, but he always tends to do something, whether it be a knockout or a dance or, you know, what he says.
He's the showstopper, the main event.
Just keep an eye on that. Keep an eye.
But, all right. Well, next week we have episode 20. We're at 19, 20 next week. And we'll talk about the ESPN Plus card on Top Rank and kind of go from there. So thanks for listening. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever you're listening to. We appreciate it. Once again, for Danny Z and Michael Shepard, this is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.